Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another segment of Let's Talk Work. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Tonight, we're pleased to ask you to click that share and tell someone that Let's Talk Work is on the air, and we're about to talk with five of the candidates running for city council seats here in Fort Worth. Tonight, we have Katie Johnson, who's running in District 3, Ricardo Avidia, who's running in District 9, Chris Nettles, who's running in District 8, Michael Kakaris, who's running in District 3, and Doyle Fine, who's running in District 9. But before we begin, let me get some housekeeping out of the way. We know that April 1st is the deadline to register to vote in the May 1st election. To register by mail, you must be registered by April 20th. Early voting begins April 19th, and it runs through the 27th. Election day, we all know, is May 1st. We ask you on May 1st to take someone to the polls with you. We want to be the change that we want to see in others. So take someone to the polls with you on May 1st. Okay, listen to my guest. I'm going to ask you, if you have not already, press 1. That would let me find you on the boards with the number that you gave me that you would be calling in from. So Katie Johnson, Ricardo Avidia, Chris Nettles, Michael Kakaris, and Doyle Fine, I ask you, if you have not already, to please press 1 so that I can find you on the board. Also a note, please don't listen with your computer and your phone. It will give a delay with your computer and throw you off. So I ask that you mute your computer and only listen and talk to me via your phone. Okay, I'm going to try to find you on the board with the numbers that you've given me. I see Katie Johnson. Good evening, Katie. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I see Ricardo Avedia. Good evening, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Nettle, I don't see you on the board. I don't see Chris Nettles on the board. We're going to move on to Michael Kakaris. Can you hear me, sir? Good evening.
Hey, Carrie. It's Michael Kakaris. Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay. We're going to look for Mr. Doyle Fine, and we should have everyone's line open. Good evening, Mr. Fine. How are you?
Fine. Yeah. Hi, Carrie. I love your selection of music.
Well, thank you. Hopefully,
on the intro. You got it going on, young lady. Anyhow, my name is Doyle Fine. I'm running District 9.
All right, then. Okay, so we have everybody that was registered for the panel tonight or confirmed for the panel tonight except for Mr. Nettles. So we're going to move on. First of all, we're going to ask each of you to please introduce yourselves and give us a little insight as to your platform and how you feel winning in your district would make Fort Worth a better place. So we're going to start with you, Ms. Johnson. Good evening.
Good evening. So my name is Katie Johnson. I'm running in District 3. So a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in the district. So where all my siblings and my parents have lived here for 30-plus years as well. So during the time I've lived in the district, I've seen a lot of businesses leave and crime increase. And what I've also noticed is the redundancy in the current city councilmen focusing on the country clubs in my district, because I have quite a few in the district. So that is one of the main things I'm looking to change, is to actually distribute funds throughout the district instead of just focusing on, you know, the upper class neighborhoods, and increasing affordable housing, the unemployment, and actually developing a 24-hour youth outreach program, because I believe that's where you're going to be able to start flipping and reducing the crime rate.
Okay. All right. Mr. Avedia, good evening.
Yes, ma'am. Good evening. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Somebody's got some noise in your background. If you all could isolate that noise by muting yourselves when you're not speaking, that would probably help. But yes, Mr. Avedia, tell us a little about yourself and your platform and how you feel you're winning in your district to make Fort Worth a better place.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Carrie, for having me. My name is Ricardo Avedia. I'm a lifelong resident of Fort Worth. I am a lifelong resident of my district as well. I live on the same street that I grew up on. I'm very fortified in the community here. Have been a youth sports coach. And I have been an advocate for the constituents and residents of my community since I can remember. My platform is really going to be there'll be accountability. Overall, accountability is going to be my platform. We need to look at education as well as health and safety. Those are all key issues that are on my priority list, as well as infrastructure. The city of Fort Worth is growing. We know this. Which is why this election is so important. This election, the new city council is going to have the very hard and privileged position of voting on the next council districts. So that's very important. And really, I want to make change in our district so that we see a little bit more representation from the overall community as a whole. I think it's important for the equal distribution of tax funds throughout the district, as well as within the tax incentive funds zones. So these are all going to be things that are on my priority list. As I stated, and accountability is going to be really what I'm searching for through this here campaign, is because once we get to downtown, we want to make sure that we are making value of the funds that we have, because currently that's just not happening. We don't see it, and we don't see the equitable distribution of these funds within our communities and our resident constituents as well. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Fine, can you tell us a little about who you are, sir, your platform, and how you're winning in your district to make Fort Worth a better place?
Well, thank you for those questions. I appreciate it, young lady. Actually, I'm a third-generation Fort Worth Texan. You could say I was born into white privilege and up above Foster Park, what they call Tanglewood now. But anyway, I got a good education starting at North High Mount Elementary, graduated Castleberry. I'm an independent contractor. I've worked at various jobs, post office, General Dynamics, was Navy veteran. Anyhow, I just decided to get off the sidelines because over the last few years, I've been a citizen advocate for a little racial justice in Fort Worth, Texas. Mm-hmm. And I had the pleasure of meeting a lot of bright young people, like some unsung heroes that actually have good ideas about common sense solutions for our city. And I think we need a lot more voices at the table. And mm-hmm. my main reason for getting in this race is my frustration with the city leadership taking the pandemic seriously and mm-hmm. being more proactive. We should step up our game. This is no time to let our guard down. I think that's true all across America. So that's what propelled me to get off the sidelines and actually get into the discussion. And I have faith, because most people I know in Fort Worth, the majority are good and decent people, and they care about their neighbor. They care about one another. And they are trying to get with the program, get vaccinated. But we got a resistance of people, a segment of the population that are anti-mask and anti-vax. We got to recognize that and try to persuade them gently to do the right thing. So that's the main motivation of my getting off sidelines, because I've gone repeatedly the last few years since Auntie Anna Jefferson was killed in her own home by Officer Dean. And I hadn't seen that resolved. No settlement for Antiana Jefferson's family. Beyonna mm-hmm. Taylor, a few months after her senseless death at the mistake of the police, mm-hmm. they made a settlement, and the city council made police reforms in Louisville, okay. Kentucky.
Okay.
So why can't where's Fort Worth?
That's a good question.
George Floyd. Settlement. It's going on 2 years now.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you.
And that is why we need a citizens, independent citizens police oversight board with subpoena power. And that'll right. build the trust with the community with our police department, because the trust isn't there. So that's a big issue in my campaign. And one more thing, we need to blanket amnesty for minor possession of marijuana under 2 ounces in Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay. All right, Mr. Nettles, I see you've joined us this evening. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you guys doing today?
Fine. How are you? Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your platform and how your winning District 8 would make Fort Worth a better place?
Sure. Thank you. And again, I am currently out of the state, and so I'm grateful that I'm able to call in on the phone call tonight as well as Zoom. It has made life a little bit easier pushing our message. So I'm Chris Nettles. I'm not new to politics or to the community. I've been here for a while. I was born and raised in Morningside on the south side of Fort Worth, Texas, in District 8. Went to elementary school there and currently still live in that area. And so I'm running for city council to upbuild our community and make sure that the poverty of our community is lifted as like West Side and North Side has been over the last 5 years. One of the things we have noticed that I-35 separates the East and the West Side. In 2017, I ran for Fort Worth mayor, and there was a Star Telegram that went out that said there's two Fort Worths. There's an East Fort Worth and there's a West Fort Worth. Both of those have different concerns, different ways of life, different ideas. However, one side votes higher than the other side, which is the West Side. And so we want to activate our voters. Here are a few reasons why I am running. Number one, our homeless issue is growing, and there's no set homeless plan in place to fix our homeless. On my website at chrisnettlescampaign.com, I lay out my three-step plan for homelessness. It's basically to get them from homelessness to self-sufficiency. So step one, we figure out why they're homeless. We do an assessment. Is it because you lost your job? Is it because of divorce? Is it because you have a mental illness? Is it because you have a drug addiction? Whatever it may be, we get the assessment, and then we put you into a program to get you to self-sufficiency. And then we make sure that there's apartments we have hotels that have been abandoned. I'm in agreement of taking those hotels and making them self-sufficiency places so that we can make those places for the homeless to live and grow their lives. Secondly, we need economic development, which means we need to bring jobs to the district that makes more than $15 an hour so that we can live off of these jobs. And when we bring jobs to the district, we're going to ask those jobs to sign a contract and a waiver to say, when we bring these jobs, 5% of the people that you hire needs to come from the district, and another 5% needs to come from our homeless plan. What that's going to do is better increase the quality of life in District 8, because we know that District 8 has the 76104, which is the lowest quality, the lowest life expectancy in all of Texas, not just Fort Worth, not Dallas, not just Cowtown, but all of Texas is the lowest life expectancy. And that's because we don't have access grocery stores that actually sell good produce and can stay stacked up long enough where we all can take a bid at it. We only have two major grocery stores in the district. That's Winco and Walmart. Now, when you look at District 6, District 7 and 9, they have anywhere from 20 to 25. And I'm talking about major grocery stores. I'm talking about Walmart, Albertsons, Kroger's, Tom Thumb, those type of grocery stores that can actually house good produce for our district. The other thing I'm running, I don't know what the time limit is on me talking.
3 minutes. I'm sorry, three minutes.
Okay, I think I used 3 minutes.
I didn't explain it to you. Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the other thing is bringing entertainment to our district. One of the things we lack in District 8, that first of all, there's no major sit-down restaurant food chains in all of District 8. There's only one drugstore in District 8, which is, I believe it's either CVS or Walgreens, because it's on Oakland and Lancaster. One is in District 5, one is in District 8. And if we want to go bowling or take our kids to skating or take our kids to urban air, we have to stop outside of the district. When we stop outside of our district, we take our tax dollars out of our district. The reason why that's important to us, the reason why we need tax dollars in our district, is because when it comes time to sit on city council and we have bond packages, when it's time to say we have packages to fix lights and roads, well, the people who's going to get those lights and roads fixed sooner are going to be the ones who bring in tax dollars, the ones who bring in revenue, the ones that have high traffic in their district. District 8 right now is on the bottom of the totem pole. So we want to take that, and we want to be able to compete with the other districts. Those are a few reasons why I'm running. My platform is on ChrisNettlesCampaign.com.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Mr. Kakaris, same question.
All right, Kerry. Once again, Michael Caceres, running District 3. You know, my campaign can really be summed up in three L's. You know, I'm going to listen, I'm going to learn, and I'm going to live. I'm going to listen to the community. I'm going to see what it is that the concerns are. I've been talking with many people out in the Las Vegas Trail area over on Camp Bowie, others in the Benbrook area, about the traffic that's built up there, you know, the buildings that have shut down. We had a huge feed and lumber store over there on Camp Bowie that shut down. We lost a lot of jobs. And a lot of the workers lost an opportunity to have another option because we do have the Home Depot further west. And I'm also going to listen to the leaders that are currently, you know, serving and that have served, because I'm sure they've learned something. You know, they were elected for a reason, right? Somebody believed in them and they won. And I'm sure that if there's something that they feel they did wrong, if there's something that they feel that's changed and we need to move in a different direction, you know, with somebody who has an open ear, I'm sure that they would share that knowledge, because I do believe we have good people here in Fort Worth. As far as learning, you know, I want to learn what works and what doesn't as long as I'm serving and making decisions for our community, not be afraid to make changes or to ask, you know, the community to go along with what we think is best as we move forward in these, you know, odd times. And I'm going to live in the neighborhoods and the businesses in my district like I do now. You know, I work out at Planet Fitness over there, you know, on Camp Bowie. I bike around here on the west side. You know, I get out to Benbrook to eat. And I'm going to continue to do those things. And as the leader, I think I'll have even more connections that I can make with business leaders and citizens to see how we might make things better, because like one of the other candidates mentioned, it's pretty good over here, you know, on the west side for some people, but for other people, there's definitely room for growth and room for making things better, because, you know, the people that are paying rent over there on Camp Bowie and purchasing homes, you know, they're paying top dollar prices. But they don't have access to the top-dollar amenities that a lot of us enjoy. I'm a Marine veteran, active-duty Marine for almost 9 years. I'm a combat veteran. I'm an educator. I'm a counselor. I'm an ordained minister. You know, what you can expect from me is accountability and servant leadership. Katie Johnson, who's also running for my district, mentioned youth outreach. I think that's a great idea. And that also goes into what I was saying about the great people that are out here and even the people that are running in this district. I think that a lot of them have good ideas and they have good intentions. And I think that we're lucky to have that here in Fort Worth. I want to connect resources with needs. You know, as a counselor, you know, for 8 years, that's what I'm used to. If there's a need, more than likely there's someone out there that's looking to help with that. And then I want to support positive growth in our community, not just growth, because, you know, all growth isn't good, but positive growth. Work on helping with the homeless population in our area. It didn't used to be that we had that large of a homeless population out here, you know, in District 3, but it's growing. And it's growing, you know, by the month. You know, you can see some of the areas in the tree line there where people are taking up residence. It's close to the highway. You know, it might be a danger to them, to others. And we need to address it with an open heart and with the resources available. And I also want to build trust with the community and the police, you know, here in Fort Worth. Fort Worth, Texas, you know, is unique because our police department has, you know, a lot of diversity in it. You know, we got Hispanics in there. We got blacks in there. We got whites in there, Asians. Some of them had tattoos. Some of them don't, you know. And I think that if we can maybe get more like-minded people together, you know, perhaps this officer has this experience in this area and might be able to carry a message more appropriately or more positively. These are changes that we can make with a good focus. And I think it's good because we want to feel safe. And I'll tell you what, when I have something going on and I need help, I'm going to call the police. And I want everybody to feel as good about calling them as I do, because when I call them, I have the expectation that they're going to come and they're going to protect me and they're going to take care of business. And I do believe that. I want to work on some new jobs and some new businesses that don't necessarily come from, you know, big businesses. You know, maybe some things that we actually need here on the West Side. Definitely some farmers markets, you know, some good produce. We got a lot of resources out here.
Okay.
And then I also want to make sure, just lastly, Carrie, that we're planning for appropriate education and infrastructure over here on the West Side, because there's a lot of homes going up. Right now, they're still going up. And there's a lot of people who leave their homes in the morning and they're risking their lives crossing two or three lanes of traffic just so that they can merge into their lane and make it, you know, out to work. Thank you.
We're going to cover that in just a minute. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host, and tonight we're speaking with five of the candidates that are running for city council here in the Fort Worth area. We have Katie Johnson, Ricardo Abidia, Chris Nettles, Michael Kakaris, and Doyle Fine. If you have a question or a comment, would like to speak to the panel, call in at 516-387-1981 and then press 1. Again, the number to call is 516-387-1981 and then press 1 once connected. I see there are some callers already holding, so we're going to go to the phone lines for a minute. 512, you've been holding quite a while. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 512-761.
Hello. Hello. I'm DC Caldwell. You invited me to join the show just briefly to introduce myself. I'm one of the candidates running for mayor. And I appreciate the conversations you're sponsoring, that you're hosting on your show.
Wonderful.
I want to contribute as I was thought to be a volunteer a long time ago, and that citizenship and service and participating in the process are important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to compete with anyone. I want to collaborate with everyone in all the races. I appreciate the discourse. I don't like giving speeches. Not thrilled with giving sermons, don't want to lecture anyone, but dialogue, conversation, having a talk is a great thing in my mind. And I heard listening and learning and living as something that one of the candidates wanted to do, and I agree we should all do that.
Well, thank you for calling in tonight, Mr. Caldwell, and good luck with your raise.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to 404, 492. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 404.
This wonderful platform that you're doing.
Good evening.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. All right. You know, thank you so much for what you're doing in here in Fort Worth. We need more platforms like this. Here's what I got to say. Now, I heard you candidates, because I live in District 3, and I'm very concerned about District 3. You guys are making it seem like District 3 is just perfect. But when it comes down to dealing with District 3, we got all kinds of stuff going on. Crime is up. We got so much going on in Fort Worth. And when you talk about the police, we got a diverse of the police in Fort Worth, that's not true. We need I am the one that started organizing the George Floyd protest in Fort Worth, Uniting My Justice, okay? So we got a major problem with the police department. So don't get on here and trying to make it seem like Fort Worth is perfect, District 3 is perfect. No, it's not. It's not perfect. It's okay. I've been in District 3 all of my life, so I know exactly. We need a strong leader who's going to focus on not just the perfect side, but let's talk about the crime rate. What are you going to do to bring the crime down? You talk about jobs, but we need more than that. We need mental health on this side of town. So west side of Fort Worth, District 3 is not perfect. Let's don't say that it's perfect because it's not perfect. I've been on District 3 for years. So let's talk about some of the other stuff that's going on. You may be talking about the good area, but let's talk about Launchmakers Trail. Let's talk about the Como area. Let's talk about certain areas that need to be fixed up. If we're going to talk about this, if we're going to be real about it, let's talk about some of the major problems that is happening on the west side of Fort Worth. The police department is not perfect. We need better policing, and we getting that, and Chris Nettle will tell you that. Fort Worth Police Department is not perfect. Maybe for the whites, but not for the African-American community. So we need to focus on those points. So let's don't get on here talking about that it's perfect. District 3 is not 100% perfect. So let's talk about some of the problems. Katie Johnson, I will vote for you because I think you do listen to the community. You will be the one that I think will be a good candidate for District 3, and I will definitely back you up.
All right. To Katie Johnson and Micah Kakaris, who are both running in District 3, can you all address his question or his concern?
Sure.
Does it matter who goes first?
Yeah, it doesn't matter who goes first.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so to address the crime problem in the West Side, that is actually the crime increase in the West Side is what interested me in getting into local politics, because I've seen the decline. I firsthand have been robbed at gunpoint off Altamir as I was working while I was doing my undergrad. So that's what really opened up my eyes to realize around me that things were changing. You know, you live somewhere so long, you see it for so long, you get used to it. But when something as catastrophic as that happens to you, it kind of opens your eyes to more problems than what you were, you know, formerly aware of. Mm-hmm. So I've looked at various things without having to get more until police reform is done. It's kind of scary to pick up the phone to call the cops, even on your neighbors, because you don't know specifically what's going on with them, mental health crisis. You know, you don't want them to get sent to jail. You want them to go get help, stuff like mm-hmm. that. You don't know the full story. So when you call the cops on your neighbors, you know, you're kind of scared for everybody at that point. So one of the things that I have researched and learned about was there's a crime lab program that helped reduce violent assault crime by 50% with the youth. So that's one of the main aspects where you have to start with crime, is focusing on the youth and what you can change mm-hmm. from the get-go, from when they're younger. So that is like a cognitive approach to where you teach the youth how to handle altercations in a less violent manner, to where they can think through the whole situation and think through the consequences of their actions. Another thing is the Urban Health Lab did a study in Philadelphia to where it's kind of like the broken window theory in a way, to where you fix up abandoned and vacant buildings. So what that's going to do, it's going to lead a drop in overall crimes, assaults, gun assaults, and nuisance crimes in the area. I do believe that a lot of the problems, not only in my district, but all over the country, is the mental health crisis. You know, nobody can afford to go get help, so you're going to have issues there too. Mm-hmm. So that's something that the West Side specifically needs to deal with, not just for the youth, but for everybody. Specifically in Las Vegas Trail, Altamere, and the Como area. That's where the crime you're seeing is increasing. And then, you know, there's no outreach for it. So
that's
those
right.
are some of the things. Like you know, you can start policies and you can start change that way, but it's not going to happen overnight. So these are programs that need to get instilled now. So 10 years from now, we can look back and start really comparing crime.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I got to agree with what Katie Johnson just said. You know, she's definitely got a feeling for what I think is a big part of building a good community, which is, you know, making sure that we're focused on our youth and the right type of education that they're getting. And I think some of that education can include, you know, how and when, you know, it is appropriate to call the police so that they're not afraid if they need help. And then maybe through those experiences, they build up that trust. If there's a concern with the amount of patrols that are being done, the type of language that's being used, the type of, you know, faces that the officers are making when they arrive in certain areas, you know, that's a matter of improving training, you know, addressing what's going on and being specific to those that are acting out. Or being defiant, you know, but it does pain me to hear, you know, that there's so much suffering in our communities in the Las Vegas Trail area where I mentioned earlier in the Como area when it comes to thinking about police right now. And that's not because, you know, there aren't important things going on and tragic things that have happened that have built up that idea. But the thing is that, you know, part of our makeup, and Katie Johnson was talking about cognitive theories, is a theory called brain plasticity. And what that means is that we can build new patterns in our brain so that we respond to situations differently. And I think that if your experience has been traumatic whenever you're dealing with the police, then that isn't something that gets corrected right away. You need to build up that trust. You need to see that they've got skin in the game and that, you know, they're putting in the work, and then it's not just a weekend thing, you know, and the good news is that that's based on, you know, on research, and those, you know, new patterns in the brain can be established, and when you do that, you're able to feel more at peace, and you're able to feel like you're, you know, benefiting from what you're doing for the community, because just living in District 3 means that you're a part of what we're doing. You know, you're paying taxes whenever you get gas or at Three Musketeers, you know. You know, you're going to work or you're saying hi to your neighbors. You know, you're praying silently in your home, you know, or maybe you're praying out loud at church. You're part of what's going on here. And so if there's a part of us that doesn't feel well, I mean, just think about the human body. You know, I can be, you know, 98% healthy. But if I jam my thumb in the car door, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be unsettled. And it doesn't matter, you know, who's rubbing my feet. And I think that's what's going on, you know, is that we've got a section, a portion of important who would like to be graceful about what's going on, but have been pushed to a limit where they feel trauma, you know, at certain times when they should be feeling the exact opposite.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Donnell Bella. That's the founder of United My Justice and a local activist here, responsible for all those protests that you see downtown. Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to 817-443. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk for Work.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, fabulous. This is Elizabeth Roper, and I finally figured out that I got to do the one thing. I held through the whole thing last week. This is a really cool panel you've got here tonight. And, you know, there's nobody from my district, District 6, here, but I, you know, something that is a big problem in my neighborhood, and I'm sure it is in y'all's, and that is house flippers coming in, and then there's things like gentrification.
Yeah.
There's such rich interesting culture in District 3, District 9, and District 8, in my opinion. So do you have a plan to protect the property taxpayers that already live in your district and handle the changing dynamic that is caused by gentrification in your older historic neighborhoods?
All right. Mr. Nettles, we'll start with you on that question.
Okay, I'm sorry. Can she repeat the question real quick? And when she said District 6, I'm sorry.
Yes. So in all of your in District 3, 9, and 8, y'all have some really rich historic neighborhoods that have been experiencing, and I'm sure will continue to experience, gentrification and house flipping and things like that. And in my neighborhood, I know that that causes a lot of problems for the original residents and the taxpayers. I was wondering if you, if any of you guys have been thinking about that, and if you have any plans for balancing that in your neighborhood.
Right, right, right. I'm sorry for that repeat.
That's okay.
Yes. So right now, Historical Southside is looking at some regentrification. Basically, we're trying. Their developers has been coming in. I think we have selected a master developer for the Evans and the Rosedale redevelopment. But the key is, because we do need development, and I did talk about that earlier when I was speaking, we do need development, and it's about making sure that the residents that live there can continue to live there. Because what some projects are happening is they're like the five, six projects, they have torn them down, and they're going to build some up. And what's going to happen is if we don't have the right type of development, the people who have been displaced are not going to be able to come back in and live in those same areas they have lived all their life. And so one of the things that we want to set in place is that we want to make sure that that the developers that come are – they have good quality, but it's also affordable. And that's basically making sure that we have affordable housing that comes there and making sure that we continue to include the residents. So that means having a conversation with them on a weekly basis or a monthly basis in a neighborhood association meeting. It's making sure that we don't just come in and let a developer come in and just house the whole project, but we allow the residents to have a say-so. So if I'm city councilman, I will make sure that the residents are fully involved in the whole process.
Dole Fine, how are you going to address gentrification?
Well, great subjects, man. Y'all really, I love the topic. And when it comes to gentrifiers and developers, have pretty much had their way in Fort Worth. And the problem is it squeezes out some of the working class neighborhoods. And there's actually, we don't have a lack of affordable housing in Fort Worth. We virtually do not have affordable housing in Fort Worth. A lot of the development is the upper end to the professional, which actually Fort Worth, you know, the number one employer industry, what would you think it would be in Fort Worth? It used to be defense workers, but it's not anymore. Do you know what it is?
Mm-mm. What?
Medical. The medical field here in Fort Worth, Texas. Those are growth industries, and there's jobs, there's opportunities. We need to connect the local schools and the junior college and the employers and transportation provided. We need better public transit. But I wanted to make one point. Listen to Pastor Chris Nettles. I've been knowing Chris since he ran for mayor. And I'll tell you one thing, and I think my friend Reverend Jackson would agree with me. Pastor Chris Nettles doesn't just talk the talk. He walks the walk. His purpose-driven ministries, they stepped up to the plate and filled the slack when our city failed disaster response in our city. And he's an unsung hero. He's a good man, and I second every proposal he's talking about. We share 76104 as a zip code in both our districts. That is a district with the lowest life expectancy in the state of Texas. Nutrition is a factor. Transportation needs. A food desert exists, and we need the chain stores with fresh produce and good food coming into and he's right that the West 7th Street is like a different world from East Lancaster. You know, totally different. And those have to be solutions we can find if we work together and actually raise each other up and try to pull together as a city and address the homeless situation. Right now, a young man I know, Stuart Campbell, he's an unsung hero. He works for North Texas Legal, trying to help families being evicted from their homes during the pandemic. We need a moratorium on evictions in Fort Worth, Texas. There's no reason we shouldn't have that because hundreds of cases have been going through the JP courts now that they open back up.
Okay, Mr. Fine, we're going to stick to the topic so that we can include everyone.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off topic. I apologize.
That's okay. Mr. Avedia, can you address gentrification for Ms. Roper?
Yes, ma'am, of course. And actually, that's a great question. We actually defended South Fort Worth against gentrification here back in November, December, and January timeframe. The city of Fort Worth, along with the Hemphill Corridor Task Force, which is a developmental organization, along with the Near South Side and other neighborhoods within the South Side District, we're going to gentrify the area. So they're going to rezone 313 acres of land along Hemphill, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, rezoning in the history of Fort Worth. And we were able to gather. We started a community organization called Hemphill No Se Vende, and we were able to gather the support of the community. And we were able to stop the rezoning under the Zoning Commission. That tells you what, you know, what communities can do when they come together. We know that when communities come to, you know, informed communities are strong communities. And as Mr. Nagel stated, if I become or when I become city council member, district number 9, I will ensure and would do my best to send out notifications and proper informational brochures and pamphlets or whatever communication is needed to all the constituents and residents in District 9 in both English, Spanish, and any other major language within the community. Because an informed community is a strong community, and we know that. Unfortunately, we know that 76104 does need some development. And that's another thing we want to talk about is we don't necessarily need redevelopment. We need development and investment because there are programs out there that, again, are part of the city's resources that is not being – the information is not being distributed to the residents and constituents. For example, most of District 8 and part of District 9 is under a neighborhood empowerment zone since – the early 2000s, 20 years. And that means that residents in these areas are able to take advantage of tax abatement programs if they spend X number of dollars on their houses. So who, for example, I think it's $20,000 to $30,000 is the figure approximately. If a resident was to spend that much amount of money on their house, then the city would return and offer them a 5-year tax abatement for 5 years. You know, that who wouldn't want to go down if who could afford it? People can't afford things now because of the pandemic. Unfortunately, the pandemic is also the biggest transfer of wealth in modern day history, but we're going to talk about that later. So we know how to defend or we know how to inform people. The 76104 district has been a desert, food desert for a long time. Over 10 years, Roseville has been ready for development. Why haven't we developed 76104 yet? So these are all things that come to mind when we talk about gentrification. You know, Rock Island was already gentrified. We saw parts of Northside be gentrified already. Stop Six is currently under. Yes, thank you so much, man.
Well, thank you.
I don't know if you're cutting me off, but.
No, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. And tonight we're speaking with five of the candidates that are running for seats running for city council seats here in Fort Worth. That's what I'm trying to say, y'all. We got Katie Johnson, Ricardo Abedia, Chris Nettles, Michael Kakaris, and Doyle Fine on the line tonight. If you have a question or a comment, call in at 516-387-1981 and then press 1 once connected. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to 817-446. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. 817-446.
I'm sorry, Carrie, can you hear me okay? This is
we
Bob Willoughby. Okay, very good. I'm there. Yeah, I wanted to just touch on a couple things real quick here. There's so many things you're talking about. That one is the crime and stuff. Well, we're over 200 police understaffed. And what we need, well, that's because the main problem is our growth is exceeding our income. We are building houses, bringing in people quicker than we can balance out. We do not have a balanced, sustainable growth balance here, and that's why we're understaffed there and having a lot of problems with overflooding with traffic and stuff. But nevertheless, one of the key answers to a lot of the problems is if we have a good mayor and city manager. No matter who gets elected, if we have a good mayor and city manager and a council member that's not scared to call out that mayor and council manager when they're not doing right. Affordable housing, I'm kind of curious about this. What I've seen on the books at the when you go to it on the website, it shows apartments, little cubicle squares. I don't know if that's what they call affordable housing or not, but I'd like to see more housings with yards where kids can have room to grow. The quality of life is more important to me than trying to make it rich here or whatever. And I was trying to see something else here that was brought. Oh, zoning was another thing someone mentioned about zoning. Yeah, you can win some cases, but when it gets right to it, if the right people want it, you're not going to win it, believe me. I've got 8 years of experience here, and what I've been after is zoning reform. For one thing, they only send out notices 300 feet of the property. That's the size of a football field. Secondly, it's not mandatory for them to put zoning signs up, and I've been asking for 8 years, and just now my council member is starting to agree publicly with me that, yeah, I'm right, we need zoning signs up. It took her 8 years, and at that rate, with all the issues I have, I'm not going to live long enough to get enough of them done to make a difference. But I appreciate y'all being on this panel. I just wanted to touch on those three, and I think you're doing a great job. But anyway, I appreciate. Oh, I got one question for Chris here, or thing I'd like to put over to him. Kelly, your counterpart, I was mentioning something about bond money, and I believe, and I'm not sure, maybe you can help me if I'm wrong. I've heard people use bond monies to build stadiums and arenas, and I know we put a lot of bond money in the Rockwood Golf Course. Well, I mean, we put way too much money over there. $12 million is really going down the drain, I think. But, Kelly, I was thinking about an amusement park by the lake would be good that would profit with a 1,500-seat amphitheater, a petting zoo, and small children's rides for daycares and underprivileged children and stuff like that, and make money off the north end of the lake because it's a dump. But Kelly said that the bond money is only for sidewalks and streets. And I'm going to back off and let you talk, but if you'd like to answer that for me, is that correct? The bond money is only for sidewalks and streets and not anything else? And I'm going to back off, and I appreciate y'all listening to me, and I'm enjoying the show, okay? Thank you.
Thank you. That was Bob Willoughby. He's running in District 5 for city council seat as well. Chris Nettles, we address that question to you.
Sure. So the answer to that question is bond money is going to be throughout the city. So it can be for sidewalks. We have had it for sidewalks. We have had it for speed bumps. And also bond money is also can be used for the arenas and all of those And so it depends on bond money also is voted on by the community. So you put these certain things into a bond package, and then we put the bond on for voting. And so it depends on however the city puts it together at that time is what you will vote on. But bond money is very, very vital because it's budgeted out, and there's a time frame that you have to use each dollar before you lose the dollar. And so it's important that when those bond elections comes up that we're all aware of what the bond election is actually for. But to answer his question, to sum it up, it can be used for a number of those things that he listed. It's good to hear from you, Bob.
Okay. Next question, y'all. We all see that the feds, the president, is sending illegal immigrants to Dallas, basically for, I'm assuming, temporary housing. That said, would you all be okay with, if you were sitting on the council, would you be okay with them sending those immigrants to Fort Worth for temporary housing? And if so, would that be fair to our homeless population? And I'm going to start with Mr. Fines because I know he has a big heart for the homeless. So, Mr. Fines, would that be okay if they sent the illegal immigrants here? And would that be fair to the homeless?
Well, I'll answer that question, but in regard to homeless, I've worked with homeless veterans here locally. And actually a problem, I know families that get vouchers from some of the good agencies like Catholic Charities, Ministers of Programs, other good agencies. But the trouble is finding a landlord or a realtor that's going to accept the vouchers. You know, there's people that have vouchers that can't get in, so we need our folks in the community, the realtors, the landlords, we need a partnership with them for, like, to collaborate for incentives that they, you know, provide affordable housing to people that need it. But to answer your question, the problem at the border originates in our failed war on drugs in Central America and the history of American foreign policy in Central America has made it a more dangerous place. I believe in the Statue of Liberty. That's what I grew up to believe in and what it represents. Mm-hmm. And it was hijacked by the Trump administration. And now President Biden's doing everything he can to make it return to legal asylum. Asylum is not a crime. People are fleeing situations that our government helped create in Central America. But we fortunately have a president who realizes that and knows that that has to be addressed to the root of the problem. But we need to be humane, and we should welcome these people. Because we claim to be a Christian nation. Well, it's time we started putting our action into our works. And these people are not a threat. In fact, the undocumented population are the less likely people to want to get in trouble with the law. And 287G is a racist policy. The Tarrant County continues the making ICE agents out of deputies in our county jail. So there's a lot wrong here in Fort Worth. That don't get me started about the Police Officers Association, who contribute largely to incumbents, mayor and city council, and they managed to fabricate a story about an honorable man named Dr. Joe Fitzgerald, who was the most educated and first and only black police chief of Fort Worth, Texas. And Star Telegram doesn't like to talk about it, but actually, City of Fort Worth has lost all their appeals on his wrongful termination.
Mr. Fine?
You know, there's a lot going on, and 3 days after the insurrection, the Police Officer Association signs up on that parlor site. That helped organize 3 days after the insurrection at our nation's capital. Why in the world is Police Officer Association joining a site like that? And when asked, he said, we didn't want someone else to pretend they were us. Well, I wonder if a married man had Tinder on his phone and his wife saw it, that would fly to say, oh, well, I was afraid somebody else might pretend to be me, you know? So,
Mr. Fine, we're going to stop. We're going to stay on topic tonight because we've only got three questions in, and it's like almost 8 o'clock. So thank you, though. Mr. Avedia, same question.
Well, you know what? I apologize. When I was in elementary school, you know, they checked the boxes on your report card, and sometimes I get it says talks too much.
I received that. Okay. Mr. Avedia, same question.
Thank you for your patience.
No. Mr. Avedia, same
yes,
question.
Ma'am. May we repeat the question, please, ma'am?
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me be clear. Okay, so we know that there are a large number of illegal immigrants coming across the border, and the president has chosen Dallas, or the feds have chosen Dallas, as a place or port for them to put a lot of the illegal aliens that have come over the border. That said, if you were on city council, would you vote for Fort Worth to be a place where, or sanctuary place for them to be placed? And if so, is that fair to our homeless population for us to house illegal immigrants coming in, but we not have a place here in Fort Worth for our homeless?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the question. It's a great question, actually. And we have to look at it from a solution standpoint. Yes, I stand with immigrant families and immigrants who are fleeing, you know, tough situations in their own countries. But it's one thing to, you know, bring them into our communities, but another thing is, do we have, or what are we going to do to make solutions to house them and give them resources so that they can be productive members of our communities? Same thing with the homeless situation. You know, the rezoning of Lancaster under the Near East Side has, you know, that they have now criminalized being homeless or houseless, rather, you know, because there are houseless communities. And to those people, those are home. That's home. So, you know, whenever you talk about rent gentrification and zoning and you add the homeless situation into the mix, you know, you start to criminalize houselessness because now it becomes trespassing. And so you start to push these people out of communities where the majority of the shelters and resources for them are. And not only that, but let's take a look into the resources that we provide for them. You know, a lot of these places, unfortunately, are institutionalized. And I've been out there in the community feeding some of the houses, communities, you know, with the Funky Town Fridge. Ms. Kendra is doing a great job, you know, for the community. And we've been out to these houses, communities, and spoken to the houses, community members. And they, you know, they need resources, you know, they know besides mental health resources, you know, some of the institutions that are there, again, they've stated that, you know, they have PTSD from being in prison, perhaps sometimes, or jail, or because they've been, you know, traumatized by the police. You know, so, and when we put them in shelters that mirror institutions like jail, then it makes it a place where people don't want to be at. And so we have to think about it from that perspective. It's like, okay, what can we do to have an inviting space so that people would be willing to take advantage of the resources that are available for them? What are we doing to communicate the resources that are available to the people in a manner that is not dehumanizing? So there are a lot of things, a lot of angles that we have to look at the homeless situation at. There are a lot of resources that are willing to help both homeless communities and the migrant communities both. So there is no reason why we can't be compassionate and help as many people as we can.
I understand. Katie Johnson, same question.
Hi, okay. So, yeah, it is not illegal to seek asylum in America. And I feel like this is a whole – it's been so politicized as illegal immigrants. There's been so much hate focused on it. But I would absolutely support housing asylum seekers in Fort Worth. as well as combating the homelessness problem as well. Especially if you look back and you see the problems in South America and even Mexico and the long history of disturbance that America specifically has caused over there. It's kind of ironic how many people in America are against helping asylum seekers, you know, and we've had a lot of input in the destruction of their own government, military, and being able to control their own, you know, people, the gangs, and all of that in the country. We also have enough funding, too. I mean, if we have the military budget we have, which is 10 times the amount that we had, I believe, 4 years ago, you know, you take away from that funding and you put it actually into the people trying to seek asylum or the people that are currently living here dealing with problems of not being able to afford to live here, you'll start seeing a lot of more positive effects in, you know, the community and so forth. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Kakara, same question.
Yeah, once again, Katie Johnson made some great points. Man, I'm glad she lives out here in my neighborhood. That's good people, maybe shopping at the same Walmart. So I also agree with Ricardo Avitia, and I want to be specific about the danger that is involved with not having a good strategy and not providing resources, which is exactly what Katie said. You know, you need to have resources. And then Ricardo said, we have resources, for example, Catholic Charities and things like that. So I think it comes down to present-minded thinking. You know, they say that the past can bring regret and the future can bring anxiety. And so it's a matter of, you know, perspective. And right now, the president made a decision. And the federal government is following through on what their boss said. And so that's what we're dealing with right now is making sure that we address the humanitarian crisis that we're currently experiencing, that the new migrants are experiencing, based on a promise that they believe that Biden had made, that they, you know, they'd be okay coming over here. That's why they're forking out, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 to get over here. But I do think when it comes to leadership, you know, you can try your best at a moment like this to complain, or you can try your best to comply in a way that's positive for the community. And I'll go back to what it says in Hebrews, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you. You know, it's only going to mix your mind up. So it's about present-minded thinking, connecting those resources, and remembering, as you mentioned, the homeless, the crisis is not fair to anybody.
I understand. Okay, Mr. Nettle, same question.
Yes, thank you again. Currently, we know that we have a city council, basically that has a five to four ratio, which means they normally vote closer to the opposite of what we're talking about now, which means they want to house these immigrants. I will be for it. I think the only way for us to do that is that we get enough people elected, such as the ones that's on the phone tonight or whoever else that's running with the same agenda, to make it happen. You kind of talked about the homelessness, and I think that it's important because it will almost be a slap in the face to open up our doors and say, yeah, bring them on, and we really have not fixed our homeless issue. And so I think that's why it's really important that we activate our homelessness plan. Now, one of the things that people don't really know is that the city of Fort Worth actually has a budget. It's a budget item that deals with homelessness. Now, it's not a lot of money, so we need to increase that budget item, but we really need to activate that role and get it going. So short answer, I will be willing to bring those in, because I think everybody should have a quality of life. And, you know, we look at it the wrong way. You know, some of us, you know, born and raised in the projects, nothing wrong with the projects. It's just a different lifestyle. Some of us born and raised in a nice neighborhood. Some of us born and raised in Como. Same thing, Stop 6 or Eastwood. And so I say that to say that we all should have an opportunity to have the best life. And so we know that these individuals come to seek asylum. We know these individuals come to get education. They come for a better lifestyle. And so we want to provide that, because America is a great country. But we want to make sure that we can provide those things. We want to make sure that we take care of home as well. So my short answer is yes, I will be willing to do that. The long answer is we need to make sure that we get enough people elected that has the same values, so that we can be a city that cares about all, a city for the people. And those are one of the things that I'm running on, for the people. I do want to apologize because I had two events tonight, but I want to jump on first. So I will have to jump off in about 10 minutes, if that's okay. I do apologize. But I will support this effort to allow them to come to the city of Fort Worth.
Okay. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Just a reminder, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Gary Hines, your host, and tonight we're speaking with five other candidates running for city council seats here in Fort Worth. We're speaking to Katie Johnson, Ricardo Avedia, Chris Nettles, Michael Kakaris, and Doyle Fine. We're going to go to area code 817-521. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Well, thank you so much. This is Antonio Twin Harris. I'm running for City Council District 5 here in Fort Worth. And I have a grave problem with the invitation of these immigrants. Not only are they not identified, we don't even know where they're coming from. Now, my thing is, until we clean up Fort Worth and its house, we don't need no one else coming up in here. Why and how dare we deal with others when we can't clean up the mess that we have downtown? I don't think y'all been out there, but I've sat and I've been in the company of those homeless down there. And the thing about it is that they are saying, we have resources, but these resources are not carrying us through and making sure that we are being put in houses, and you have the audacity to say that you'll welcome someone else when it's broken right down here, right downtown. So again, my stance is no. Until Fort Worth starts doing what it's supposed to do for the citizens of Fort Worth, we can't afford to let no one else in here. We can't even deal with our own prisoners coming out of prison because we don't allow them to even get apartment. I'm not trying to take up your time because I know that this is your forum and this is your platform to do and say what you have to do. But again, I am a concerned citizen. I am in a position to make some changes. And if the change that I have to make is to put in your mind to understand that we must do what we're supposed to do right now, right here. If the president won't invite them, let them go down there to the White House. They got plenty of room down there. So send them on down there. They're not welcome here until we get our house cleaned up. And I digress with that.
Thank you. That was Antonio Green. Harris running in District 5. Mr. Nettle, since you got to cut out of here in just a minute, we want to ask you the last, next question first. After the Tatiana Jefferson shooting in Fort Worth, the city exploded, and many people went down to city council week after week complaining of police brutality. That said, how would you address police brutality in Fort Worth?
Yes, thank you again for the question. When I ran in 2017, as Doyle Fine talked about earlier, I ran on the platform of the Citizens Review Board. I don't ask for any pats on the back, but I want to, you know, acknowledge that I was one of the first ones who led the effort to establish a citizens review board. And what that means is, it's a group of people, just like me and you, and the ones that are on the file. None of us are elected at this moment, I don't believe. And so we're regular citizens of the city of Fort Worth. We have the ability to sit on the citizens review board. And when we have high-profile cases such as that, and people say, what are high-profile cases? High-profile cases. There are cases that gets the community involved, just like the Tatiana Jefferson. And so we will look at the evidence. We will have a clear look at what happened with all the body cams, what happened on the 911 call, and we will investigate. And then we will send a recommendation to the city of Fort Worth. But we want to take it another step and also give subpoena power, basically meaning that we're not just going to send a recommendation to city of Fort Worth, which is the city council and the Fort Worth Police Department, but basically we will actually have the power to say Aaron Dean violated Tatiana Jefferson's rights. He needs to be fired and punished and charged with murder. That could have came from the Citizens Review Board, because what happens now as it relates to the Fort Worth Police Department, the Fort Worth Police Department polices themselves. So just like me, I'm a small business owner. Well, if I make a mistake in my business, or if that causes me a lot of money, or that lose a lot of money, or causes me the business to fail in the effort, I'm not going to fire myself because I own the business. I'm going to say, don't do that again. But I'm not going to take any punishments of myself. And that's the same thing as Fort Worth is doing. They don't punish their officers because they police themselves. We have to take that right out of their hands. They work for the community. They're to serve and to protect. Again, we love our officers. I mean, I do. I respect the officers, but at the same time, they signed the oath to protect and to serve. And if they violate that, they need to be dealt with just like any other regular citizen. So to deal with that, if we establish a independent citizens review board that's not affiliated with the city of Fort Worth, and that's not affiliated with Fort Worth Police Department. And we have to make sure that we choose different people. We know that the racial and cultural task force, that the city council had picked their people. And, you know, if you've been into politics or been into the city arena, a lot of people who was on the top of the ticket making decisions were people that have used year in and year out. It's the same agenda that's been pushed in Fort Worth, and I want to propose that we change that agenda. Me personally, I ran against Mayor Price in 2017. I presented the Citizens Review Board. When they talked about the racial task force, I asked Mayor Price if she would allow me to sit on that board. I didn't get on the board. I'm a regular citizen. I've been fighting for equal rights. So the way it works is, because I heard, so let me say this. So, and I'm gonna let y'all go. The way it works is normally when you run a race like that, the incumbent, you know, they win. They'll call you and say, "Well, how can I help you? How can I get you involved?" And so I had a sit down with Mayor Price, an hour long sit down with her security team outside the door. But anyway, I had a sit down meeting with her, and she asked me what could she do to help me get involved in the city. I said, I want to be on the Race and Culture Task Force. I would like to sit on some boards within the city, but I want to sit on the boards that actually make a difference within the city, like the zoning board, the planning board. And I was denied all of those because those are important things within the city, and you learn so much about it. So to prevent those things happening again to what happened to our dear sister in District 8, because that was in District 8. We need an independent review board, and we need to make sure that we choose different people who is not a part of the city already, because that changes how they affect their uses. So that's what I would do. And we'll put and here's the thing, and I'll let you go. The Citizens Review Board has been recommended by the Race and Culture Task Force, and that's what upsets me a little bit, is because it's already recommended, and we have 8 council people and a mayor that has not implemented it. They said we need it, and they still won't implement it.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Thank you for your response. Thank you also for being with us tonight, and good luck with your race.
All right, thank you. You guys have a wonderful evening.
You too. Mr. Fine, same question.
Yes, question again, please. I was caught up. I say amen to Brother Nettles.
Okay.
Young man, he's got it on the ball. Go ahead.
Okay, the question was, after the Tatiana Jefferson shooting, there was an outcry from the city. A lot of people went to the city council meetings week after week asking for something to be done about police brutality. They wanted the city to address police brutality in Fort Worth. That said, how would you deal with that situation? How would you address police brutality in Fort Worth?
Well, I'm one of those people that repeatedly went down to City Hall from the beginning and asking people to say her name, and the mayor pronounced it properly, finally. But bless her heart. It's like we don't have to invent the wheel in Fort Worth. In Newark, New Jersey, they implemented more of a de-escalating training. And, you know, they went one whole year with no police officers shooting anybody. Other things we can do, the review board is essential to build any trust between the community here in Fort Worth. I have an old headline here. It says, "We don't feel safe." Back in the summer, so the review board is essential, I think, to have any trust, and every other major city in Texas has it. How come Fort Worth doesn't? It's because the POA made sure we had good chiefs that wanted to reform the police department, and I know them. I consider them friends. Dr. Joel Fitzgerald, he's done wrong, and after that, the following chief, he did the best he could. Handy's dealt. But they're the obstacle to, and they have the political sway with the status quo, with the council. And they enthusiastically supported Trump. It was like a poke in the eye of the communities of color in Fort Worth. Endorsed the sheriff. Mm-hmm. It was one of the cheerleaders for Steal the Vote, the big lie that Trump spread. And mm-hmm. over a very qualified black captain in the Fort Worth Police Department, one of their
mm-hmm.
own, the sheriff, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. yeah, I know these races are nonpartisan, but everybody knows who's who. You know, it's kind of like a theater of the absurd in a way. But anyway, I just want to say, in regard to homelessness, the cure for homelessness is a home. And once again, about reinventing the wheel, Salt Lake City, Utah, they found housing first, getting people in mm-hmm. homes of their own, was far mm-hmm. cheaper and more effective than trying to manage homelessness with the high cost of the police, the fire department, the MedStar, the county hospital, that actually it's financially, fiscally responsible thing to do. Also, we could have mental health units respond to wellness checks and mental health cases to relieve our police officers from being put in those bad situations and tragic
okay.
results. You're better off with
okay.
a social worker with a degree than a cop with a gun. They're more effective, and they've done that in Denver this past year,
okay.
and it's worked
okay.
quite well. So that would relieve our police officers so they can concentrate on the crime. And also have them quit bugging people that are minor possession of marijuana. You got people making millions of dollars in marijuana around the country. That's ridiculous. You know, so that's just a few things that we could do with changing our and to shed light on the makeup of the police department, we're a minority-majority city. We're the 13th largest city in the country, growing fast. And our police department does not reflect that. It hasn't come up to that. And the promotions, it's still very – people – they also – a police officer should be from Fort Worth. They should live in the community and have relations in the community. We need to hire in Fort Worth. Those are a few things I suggest. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Katie Johnson, same question, if you remember the question. Same question.
Yes, ma'am, if you could, just so I'm 100% clarified on it.
Okay. After the Tatiana Jefferson, there was an extreme outcry from the citizens here in Fort Worth. And I watched week after week after people poured into the city council chambers demanding that the city leadership address police brutality in Fort Worth. That said, how would you suggest that the city address police brutality here?
Okay, so police brutality is an ongoing issue, not even only in America, but throughout the world. And what this is you have a system that is going to protect itself, a system that doesn't want to claim fault, and a system that's going to put the blame on everybody but themselves. So what you have to do is you have to start with the people that indict first off. That would be the grand jury. There's no reason the grand jury should be the age that they are, because that's a different generation than most crimes happening in the city. So you're going to have more biased grand jury members that are not going to want to indict police officers. They're not going to want to fully charge them. They're going to want to let them either get paid leave or, just get knocked down or ultimately relieved of their duty. My personal opinion is, if you're a police officer, you should be held not even as a citizen would get held if they, murdered somebody like Ms. Jefferson, but held even to another extent of the law because they've done training. They've done gun training. They have a job that normal civilians don't have, but they're getting away with murder, and nothing's happening for the families in Fort Worth. So I think with Ms. Jefferson's case, it should be an eye-opener to the whole state of Texas on the corruption that starts from the indictment process and goes on through to the police department. So with that, it would have to start, inside with the court system. It would need to go through with police training, including knowing how to, if they get called, they need to know how to process that situation. There needs to be different officers called for different crimes or concerns. Like one of the candidates mentioned, social workers. Social workers would be great for mental health cases or even smaller programs. I know that Fort Worth I forgot what the team exactly is called, but it's a team for neighborhoods for low crime calls or stuff like that. We need more of that throughout the city to where it's not just police officers going to every single civic case that needs to be handled so that they can focus on more violent crimes and stuff like that. But it's going to start with training, funding. The funding is a big issue. Fort Worth just bought a new helicopter. Not sure why, but, that money can actually go back into the community, which is going to relieve the crime rates. The more money you put into the community, the more it's going to help it out. So another thing, body cams, those need to be mandatory. Dash cams, but an officer's not turning on either or. They need to be held liable for this. So it's all about accountability, and that's where I think Fort Worth is messing up right here. It's not wanting to hold their own accountable.
All right. Mr. Abedia, same question.
Yes, ma'am. Can you repeat the question, please?
Okay. After the Tatiana Jefferson shooting back in 2019, what we saw was a huge outcry from the citizens of Fort Worth. Week after week, they went down to the city council and poured into the city council chambers demanding that the city leadership address police brutality. That said, if you were a member of the district, I mean, of the city council, how would you feel that the city needs to address police brutality?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the question. And very unfortunate situation what happened with Ms. Jefferson. I think we have to really look at the way that we vet our training. You know, really, training has a lot to do with it. Accountability and, of course, community policing. If we're going to talk about policing, I know the broken windows theory is a theory that is a zero tolerance theory. And what we tend to see with broken windows theory is a higher crime rates and, you know, more people in jail because of the zero tolerance theory. So if we start to look at, you know, policing from a community aspect and start to train officers in community policing and, you know, provide them with the training necessary and change the policies, the rules of engagement. A lot of our police officers are prior military. So they have a different set of rules of engagement in the military. In the military, you can't shoot unless you shoot upon. And so, you know, when we're talking about, you know, our police officers, you know, we have to start to think about and look at what kind of, you know, training experience do they have. What are their credentials with, you know, handling a weapon? And what can we do to train these officers so that they're better versed, fertile, knowledged, and you know, better trained to carry a weapon because they do need to be held to that higher standard. And I agree that we do need to have mandatory body cams, dash cams, and programs that will help recruit more officers from communities of less resources. We do need to see more diverse and robust police force with not just the racial bias training that they currently go under, but also training that deals with white fragility and white privilege. I mean, these are real things that unfortunately, you know, people don't want to speak about because a lot of times, you know, accountability feels like an attack when you're not ready to be responsible for your actions. So, you know, when we start to think about things from that perspective, then we start to see things change because a lot, you know, we heard about funding the police. Well, you know, the police have a lot of money. We heard that, you know, the police have a 10 times bigger budget today than they did 4 years ago. We're seeing not the police, but the government as a whole with the military. So, and these military type weapons are being fed into the police force. So, you know, police officers who have no prior military training are being given weapons for them to basically, you know, learn on real people. And I mean, we have to really talk about police reform and on holding people accountable. And it starts from the inside and out. You know, we have to really look at, you know, like straight at the grand jury, the judges, the DA, you know, everybody as a whole, the whole administration.
I understand. Wow, excellent point, Sadie. Mr. Kakaris, same question. Do I need to repeat the question or?
Oh no, ma'am. First of all, you know, we should definitely say her name, Tatiana Jefferson, a soul lost, and in a way that is not only unfortunate for her family, because grief is different for everyone. They may suffer two more years. They may suffer 20 more years. And while we talk about the devastation, they experience that devastation firsthand, and so I'm sorry to them. I'm sorry that things like that happen. But I'll tell you that in 2021, there are accountability measures that we can put in place. We can use data to look for trends and commonalities. You know, what is, for example, the most reported type of police brutality that was mentioned within those weeks that there was higher traffic at City Hall after the tragedy, right? And then address those top concerns first. And not only the concerns, but the individuals who did it. I remember when I was in the Marine Corps, if one person, you know, was wearing a beanie on their head, you know, when we were in formation and it was 10 degrees outside and they made us wear silky shorts and a T-shirt to run, then we all had to pay the price. And that sometimes would really bring morale down, you know, because when you looked at your leadership at that point, you said, man, you know, here I am doing a good job, but my face is in the mud, you know. And I think that that is what we want to stay away from. We want to use roving leadership in our police department. Look for those people with outstanding records. Make sure they're the ones that are becoming peer trainers, team leaders, that they're the ones becoming the sergeants. You know, have them have some accountability in there where they can use their best resources. And then when it comes to training, you know, I used to be a youth mental health first aid instructor. And what we would do is we would meet with different types of organizations and individuals, and we would educate them on mental health crises, on different types of disabilities and diagnoses. And then additionally, what types of symptoms or side effects might come with the medications that were used for those symptoms. And it was eye-opening to these people when they understood how bad the mental health crisis was. So, yes, I agree that there are opportunities to send a licensed social worker or counselor to, you know, to a call. But I also think that we need to make those connections, like, like I've mentioned before, on other shows. You know, we have a great organization in Fort Worth called Blue Zones. They're all about wellness. You know, living healthy in mind and body. And I think there's some opportunities to get them connected with the police and have some, you know, exercise sessions, you know, some dance sessions, some Zumba sessions out in the park. I think that we can have pictures with the police, you know, where maybe in neighborhoods where there isn't that connection, you know, monthly there's a, you know, a screen put up outside. You know, we're coming into the warm months now, and you can watch a movie outside with the cops, you know, pop a soda pop, you know, and just have a sip and just enjoy life. You know, sometimes it's a matter of perspective. I'll tell you this. I know I'm out of time, but I'll tell you this real short story. When I was in Iraq, it was very different in the South versus the North. The children would come up to us in the South, and they would ask for food. They would approach our vehicles with almost no regard for any danger. And as Marines, we would give them our food. And what would happen is that as we made our way further up north, we started running low on supplies because that's just the way combat is, okay? And what we would do is we would have a plastic spoon that we would put on our flak jacket because we knew that, you know, maybe I didn't have my own meal, but maybe I could get a spoon of Sergeant Mark's meal over there, you know, whenever he cracks his open. And by the time we got to the north, a lot of us kept those spoons in our flak jackets. And I remember one of the children near the Constantine wire coming up and talking to me and saying, you know, why do you have that spoon in your flak jacket? And I said, oh, so I can eat food, you know, and, you know, I don't always have a spoon. Sometimes we have to share. And that kid told me that the story going around Baghdad was that the Marines kept plastic spoons on their flak jackets so they could eat the children.
Wow.
It's a matter of perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Wow, excellent answers. And I would suggest somebody send this tape to Chief Noakes because I really was impressed with all of y'all's answers concerning police brutality, and they definitely should use some of those suggestions that you all gave tonight. We're going to go to the phone lines again, 314-381. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth, and you got 60 seconds to answer or ask a question or make a comment.
Well, I'm going to say something real quick. Hello, Carrie. I hear all the emphasis put on police officers. But when do you get citizens to respect authority? That don't happen. It don't happen in the house. You know it don't go on in the schools. And, of course, it works its way out in the public. Nobody respects authority. When you look at these videos, they don't comply. You just comply. It's simple. You know, in Chicago, since Memorial Day of last year up until last Thursday, which is 315 days, you don't had 4,017 blacks shot by other blacks with 633 murders. 4,017.
Wow.
Just think about that. And another thing, these people that's coming out of South America, those countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, belong to the Organization of American States. They're just like the UN. Matter of fact, Canada and the United States give to the OAS. The OAS is supposed to take care of those problems that those people are running from, supposedly. The United States gave Guatemala $157 million, Honduras $71 million, El Salvador $85 million to take care of the problems that they complain about. But they come to the U.S. That's not the way it's supposed to be done. If you got a problem in your country, you're supposed to go to the adjacent country. Go to the U.S. Embassy and explain why you want to come to the U.S. Their adjacent country is Costa Rica, Belize, and Mexico. John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Immigrants that come to the United States are supposed to make their lives better for the people that's there, not make their lives better. You look at the other immigrants from Asia, even Nigeria and West Africa, they come here and they perform things that makes them the highest paid workers, professional in the country, even more so than whites. You can't keep taking everybody into your country. What happens when you fall? Try that in your household and see how long it lasts.
Bianchi, thank you. You know we got to get out of here tonight. Thank you, Bianchi, for your call. Listen, y'all. Final question we're probably going to be able to get you tonight. Let's see. And I'm going to say this is let's see, the best way I can. There's a lot going on in this city in terms of the leadership downtown. The people have cried out a long time that they were not heard, that the city, the current leadership downtown, did not have a heartbeat for the people. What is it about you all that we can believe that if elected, you all will feel the heartbeat of the people, vote what the people want, and not get off into cliques and voting groups? A lot of people feel like the city council and the mayor and everybody now is voting one person, you know, nominates or whatever they call what they do down there, and then everybody, you know, seconds it and it's put into law or put into whatever we call our rules and guidelines here. And so how do we know that if elected, you guys will not do us the same way? How do we know that you all are going to vote individually and not in groups, and therefore we get the same of what we currently have? I'll start with you, Mr. Kakaris.
Thanks. Well, the thought that there's that many people upset with the leadership right now in Fort Worth is disheartening. I think that we can look at it two ways. You know, one is with regret and malice and anger, and the other is with an opportunity to make things better, because things are going to change either way. You know, somebody's going to get up there, and hopefully this is the good thing. You know, the people make the right decision. Because really it's up to them, you know, who they want in office and who they want to represent them. Now, you only get to make the choice once, you know, and then we got to live with it for a little while. But, you know, we can make the choice again later. So I don't want you to feel too much pressure about who you're selecting and feeling like, man, I really don't know who to go for, because we'll have opportunities to get better. But at the end of it, you can depend on me to do exactly what I said I was going to do at the beginning of the program. You know, I'm going to listen, I'm going to learn, and I'm going to live in my community. And if they're telling me that something needs to occur, then I have no problem using my skills to help influence the decisions being made. Now, I've spent almost 20 years serving the country and the community, in the Marines, you know, and then also in public service and education. So the work that I've devoted myself to is about the people. And I'll continue to do that work, God willing. You know, as far as my district goes, I'm going to say it again. District 3, you got some good people, you know. And so for the rest of the districts, yes, think, you know, be wise about your decision. And also, I just want to – I don't want someone to come back later and say, you know, I didn't mention this, but Ricardo Avitia actually helped me to earn both my master's degrees when he was, you know, helping out with veterans in college affairs. So I just want to get that out there. Thank you.
Wow. Well, since you mentioned Mr. Avitia, Mr. Avitia, and let me reiterate the question, or let me rephrase the question when I say it that way. What I'm saying in this question is, how do the people know that you will vote downtown with the heartbeat of the people and not vote in clicks, as people feel this what's happening now in the leadership downtown? They feel like the people will say, we don't want this, and the city council and the mayor will then vote the opposite of the heartbeat of the people. So how do the people know that if they elect you, you will vote the heartbeat of the people?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Caceres, for saying that, sir. You know, being a Marine myself, I've also been putting in work in the community and for the country as well. Being a youth sports coach and, you know, working in higher education and providing resources for veterans like Mr. Caceres and other veterans. And, you know, I am deeply involved in my community, and I am blessed to have the support of our community, and most likely because I listen, and I listen to understand and not to reply, which is very important, especially as a in a leadership role, because many a times we forget that although we are able to use our experiences and you know, maneuver, you know, through life in a manner that that allows us to use our voice, you know, we can't remember where we came from. We must always stay grounded, and for that reason, I will always vote for the issues, and not necessarily with the group. I am known to have stood up on my own against the grain. And I'm confident that I will continue to do that for the betterment of the constituents of District 9 and Fort Worth as well.
Thank you. Katie Johnson, how can the people trust that you will vote the heartbeat of the people and not get seated and then just vote along whatever the majority wants on the council? Or
okay. Yeah. So I think it's important to look at someone's campaign money. Who's endorsing them? Who are they accepting PAC money from? And where are they fundraising? So those are going to be key indicators of the type of votes that these candidates are going to make, you know, during their term. Another thing is look at where they're from, how long have they lived in the district, what's their background, where did they grow up? You know, what's their job currently? You have a lot of people running and, you know, current people that are sitting currently on council that have a lot of real estate backgrounds. So what does that mean? Well, that means that these real estate developers are trying to get to council for their own agenda. You know, they have plans for the city that doesn't include current citizens, but it includes, you know, the citizens they want to pull in. And that's where you start getting into the gentrification issues of Fort Worth. So like I said, I was born and raised in this district. The whole reason I wanted to run for this campaign was, other than realizing the increase in crime, you know, current councilmen's not doing, you know, what they're supposed to be doing, it was looking at the vote records. They're all voting the same. Something's got to be wrong there. And what they're voting for and where the money's going was a huge concern on my behalf. So, you know, I think those are the main things that you can look at when you go to the polls to elect someone.
Wonderful. Mr. Fine, how can the people trust you will vote for the people?
Could I just say real briefly, Ricardo, he impresses me. He's a very bright young man, seems to have a firm grasp about issues from zoning to consequences of gentrification. I just wanted to let him know that. Well, actually, I'm a very unconventional campaign. I'm working class. I'm not independently wealthy, nor do I have a posse of wealthy donors. I have no special interests. In fact, Molly Ivins was a great Texas journalist about politics. She wrote a book called You Gotta Dance with Them That Brung You. Well, here's my promise to the voters of District 9. I don't have any wealthy donor partners. I seek no one's endorsement. Even if I agree with them, if they want to support the message, they can go to my website, fine49.com. I think I have specified on the policy proposals I'm making on my platform specifics unlike any other candidate in any of the races. But I just want to make it clear, the people, I'm not owned by anybody. There's no strings attached. And I guarantee the voters of District 9 that the voter, the everyday working person, they will be my only dance partner. And that's the way I'm running my campaign. No consultants, no opposition research. I'm not going to litter the landscape with signs. I'm just going to push a message. And if people want to feel concerned, it touches their lives, then welcome aboard. Me campaign, Sue campaign.
Wow. You know, that leads into the final question, and I think Mr. Fine just answered it. Mr. Fine, do I understand you to say that you have not taken any campaign donations from any special interest groups?
That's correct. I do not seek them either, nor any endorsement. I've been answering questionnaires from the Arts Council to the Realtors to the Southside Inc., on and on. But I just give my honest answer. I want to be about honesty, following the science, and common sense solutions. And I don't have all the answers, but I can delegate. And I know a lot of young, bright people, like Pamela Young is one of them that comes to mind, that's very effective and active. And Jen Sardou, she's having a canvas get out the vote over in District 2 tomorrow. I want to go over there and lend her a hand because she's a real deal.
We want to get to everybody before the show ends.
Ricardo, I think there's a lot Ricardo and I agree upon.
Okay, all right. Ms. Johnson, do we understand you to say that you're not taking any campaign donations from any special interest groups?
No, ma'am. I have taken $0 from anybody but, you know, people that want to personally donate to my campaign. And the only people I've been endorsed by, you know, were people that looked at my information and endorsed me based on that. They weren't asking me what I could do for them.
Gotcha. Mr. Vidia, same question.
Can you hear me?
Mr. Vidia? Yes, we can.
Yes. Okay. Yes, ma'am. I actually have not asked for monetary donations, actually, although I did post, a link for people who would like to donate to our campaign to do so. And I know that people have said that's not a good idea, which is why I posted this thing. Okay, if you want to donate, go ahead. But what I'm asking people to donate is donate your time. I want to see you out there with me doing the work, you know, being committed to our communities, to our district. Strong communities, our informed communities, and the only way we can get informed is to get plugged in and put in the work. And so that's why I am asking people to be a part of our campaign, and we're seeking donations and time, because time is our most valuable commodity. And if you're willing to invest your time, then you're for your community. And I believe together we are stronger. Creo que juntos somos más fuertes.
All right. Mr. Kakaris, same question. Mr. Kakaris? Did we lose him? Michael Kakaris? Did we lose him? Okay, I guess that question is not going to get answered by him. Mr. Kakaris, can you
hear me? And I'd like to also say, I'm so sorry, Mr. Kakaris.
You said what?
Oh, I just waited.
We didn't hear you.
Say, Mr. Chris Dorff. He's on hold. He's Mr. Kakaris.
Are you talking to Dorff or Chris Neville? Chris left.
Yes. No, Mr. Dorff. Sorry, Mr. Dorff.
Yeah, go
we're
ahead.
We're talking to Michael Kakaris.
Yeah, he's in your queue, man. He's in your queue.
We're talking to Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Yes, he's in your queue.
How are you?
Can you not hear me? Can you hear me, Michael?
He's in your queue.
Okay, did you understand the question?
To me, what is it?
No. The question was to my okay. We're gonna move on. Michael Kakaris, that final question was to you, and that was did you take any campaign donations from any special interest groups? But for some reason, Michael's line is not working, or Michael is not responding. Not sure what happened there. We're gonna make sure that his phone line is open. Not sure what happened there.
So he's in your queue.
Can you hear me, Michael? Yeah, he's in the queue. For some reason, yeah. I'm sorry. No? Michael, can you hear us? I'm not sure what happened. Okay, I'm sorry. I see your phone line some kind of way got cut off.
Hello?
Can you hear me, Michael? Okay, I'm sorry. There you go.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Man, there's almost some controversy. They're like, this guy's taking all the donations, you know. That's why these other candidates don't have any. No, that's a big negative. I haven't taken any donations. And additionally, I have no signs up. Listen, I think that when all those signs go up together, people don't really know, like, the difference. You know what I mean? It's kind of like having a bunch of, you know, beautiful flowers in a garden. Right? You don't know specifically which one you like the best. You just know they're there. And so I thought to myself, you know, why spend money on something like that? You know, now later if I have somebody cut me a check, I mean, I do have a nonprofit, and they say, you know what we want to do? We want to buy like 1,000 Uncrustables, and we just want you to give those out to, you know, every Boys and Girls Club, every YMCA, and just let the kids have a snack. And I do that. But as far as, you know, taking money for signs, I think one of the candidates mentioned, you know, research and this and that. Nah, I'm not doing any of that.
Gotcha. Okay, y'all, listen. I want to say thank you to Katie Johnson, Ricardo Avidia, Chris Nettles, Michael Kakaris, and Doyle Fine for being with us tonight. Listen, y'all, great job. I wish you all the best of luck with your races. Again, y'all, I think Mr. Avidia just said it best, one of the greatest donations you can make to these guys is to help out with their campaigns. Does everyone have a website up that they can go to your website?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to post in the link after the show how to reach out to these guys if you want to spend some time either donating your time to their efforts to run in these races. Y'all listen, this is it. This is what we do each and every Friday night here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. We're talking to the candidates all the way up until election night. We want to know who's running in these races and how can they make our city a better place. Also to the candidates, if you'd like to advertise, if you want to advertise here on Let's Talk Fort Worth, we are running paid for campaign ads here on the show. Listen, we got to get out of here. But we thank you all for joining us tonight. We thank you to the audience for listening, and we will see you next week, same time, same bad channel. Good night.
Thank you, Ms. Carey. Ricardo Avita for City Council on Facebook and Instagram.
Thank you.
Yeah, Doyle Fine, fine4number9.com.
Thank you.
Katie Johnson is a pretty good neighbor.
Yeah, nice to meet all you guys, and thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good night, y'all.
Good night. Stay